Fear the Walking Dead episode 5 is over, but we are just getting started here on Fear the Walking Dead, the post-show recap. And now here are the two guys who are always just going off the cuff links, Rob Cesarino and Josh Wigler. Josh, oh my God, there's only one episode left of Fear the Walking Dead season 1.
That's right, and there's only one cuff link left.
Yes, and I am very uncomfortable duct taped to this seat.
Yeah. And I've just been slicing at you with my barbershop utensils. I've been trying to get the codes from you for hours now, and you're just not giving anything up. You're much more resilient than I expected you would be.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm not that different from the man in the chair and the torturer.
Yeah. But which one are you is the question.
I forget.
Are you the man in the chair or are you the torturer?
I get mixed up.
Yeah.
So we have so much to talk about here as we are only 1 hour of TV away from the finale of Fear the Walking Dead season 1. And again, I thought this was another strong episode tonight as we move towards this season finale, which apparently is going to involve the military saying, all right, we're going to retreat now.
Yeah, they're done. They're out.
They're done.
Yeah. I give up. I quit.
We're out of here.
Yeah.
So that's enough of that, and they're going to go and then do a mercy killing on everybody that's in wherever the base is, and then we'll see where our characters end up going as we head towards season 2. But lots to get into here tonight. Of course, we will be getting into your questions as well, and then setting everything up for next week's finale.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do here. And I can't believe we're already up there. We're one episode left, that's it. This season really flew by. For something that had a really slow pace at the very start of it, I feel like we've come a long way in only 5 episodes.
Yeah, we really have. I mean, that time jump really did accelerate things, and then we've gotten to the point where now the military is just pulling out, and I don't know where they're going to go. But Josh, does this mean to you that in this Fear the Walking Dead, Walking Dead universe, that all of the military is just like pulled up? Did they like huddle in like Area 51 or something like this?
Wow. Is that where everyone's going? They're all like, that's the mandate. Get to Area 51.
I think that would be pretty cool, but I don't get the sense that that's where this is going.
You think these guys are just going rogue?
I think that we are going to have our heroes on their own, but it would be interesting to find out eventually what is going on with the military. Like, they're retreating. They're going somewhere. Where are they going?
Yeah, that would be cool. I would like that. I mean, we have a couple of military characters that we've gotten to know a tiny, tiny bit. There might still be a way, you know, it's hard to imagine every single person getting reunited in the finale. And there's some of these people who are at the military base, and maybe there's some way that they could tack on to whatever is coming up next. Like Liza, if she could hang out with Dr. Exner to, you know, move on to wherever these guys are going next. That could be some eyes and ears into that storyline. But something tells me that this whole military thing is going to blow up next week. I think that we might have that as a season 1 story, and we're moving to new stuff in season 2.
All right. Josh, what do you think is the top story from episode 5, Cobalt?
Top story of Cobalt for me is that I drew first blood on the death draft.
Griselda?
Griselda.
I feel like I had her high on my board.
She's high on the board, but I got her. I got Griselda. That feels good. I got Griselda with someone who's on your board. Liza is the one who did the deed.
Yeah, Liza looks like she's going to survive season 1. Griselda was really rattling off some nonsense at the end of the episode. What did you make of what she was talking about?
I couldn't tell if she was seeing something, if she was talking about, you know, ghosts from the past or something divine, something spiritual, something supernatural. Part of me kind of felt like she was talking about Daniel. Even.
Yeah. But at no point during the series did she ever seem afraid of Daniel. Like,
right.
This wasn't like a situation like Carol and her husband in Walking Dead proper. It seemed like that they were very much partners, and Daniel was like a very loving husband to her. But
right.
The episode did make this big reveal of Daniel being like this Saeed type character.
How great is that, by the way? Saeed Salazar is what I'm calling him now.
He lives on.
Daniel Jarrah.
He's a torturer. I am a torturer.
I'm a torturer.
And so he is going to be torturing people left and right, I guess, moving forward. But that being said, I think that Griselda might have just been going into talking about nonsense. I don't know if we can take anything away from what she's saying.
Yeah, well, I wonder if it's a thing where it's like they had a really solid thing, and just as she's on the end of her line, she's, you know, confessing all these things that even she's only just having an epiphany on. I'm not really sure. We did find out some gnarly stuff about Daniel Salazar in this episode. I wouldn't be surprised to find out that Griselda was very afraid of this man because he seems to be the type of man that you should be afraid of. Former Jack Bauer type. This is a scary thing.
Okay, well, let's talk about Daniel and his torture of the military guy. What was this guy's name? Reynolds?
I thought it was Reynolds, but now Wikipedia is telling me that his name is Adams.
Adams, okay. Yeah. As long as it's plural.
Yeah, it's two. It's two Adams.
So I don't know what happened if, like, Daniel cold-cocked this guy and then they sort of got him tied up in the chair after Ophelia sort of seduced him into getting into the house. And then they're going to torture him to find out where Griselda ultimately is. But then, of course, Daniel ends up hearing this word cobalt over and over again, and he ends up torturing him to tell him what it is. Now, does Adams end up dead by the end of the episode?
I don't think that he's dead. I feel like we would have seen that. That's such a big thing to have one of these characters kill another human being that we would have to be there to see that. I don't think that that can happen without us laying eyes upon the event. I think that he's still cut up in the basement. I think he's still tied up. I don't think that he's dead. I wonder what use he can provide in the next episode, if he's going to provide any use at all. I don't think he's dead. Do you think he's dead?
I thought he was dead at the point where Ophelia ran out, and then we saw Madison walk in and sort of say, did he tell us what he needed to know? Because you don't hear him like, hey, help, nice lady, please help me.
Like,
this guy is crazy.
Oh, my arm!
I mean, he did seem super calm by the end of the episode. He did not seem very frantic or anything like that.
No. I think at that point, he was just like, I gotta play this cool as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
I want the man to stop slicing my arm.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's no way that they're gonna kill this guy on Travis's watch. Travis would never let that go down.
Hello? I don't know. Travis might be turning over a new leaf pretty soon.
He better. He's going to need to. Otherwise, he's going to become barbecue.
And so, ultimately, we find out about this COBOL plant. Before we talk more about that, just talk a little bit more about Daniel and his story tonight, because it was very badass. Like, there was a lot of, like, monologuing in terms of talking about his past. What ultimately was his job? He was just a guy who interrogated people?
Yeah, it seemed like he was, you know, he's from El Salvador. There's a civil war back in the day, and it seems like he is on the side of it where he is torturing people. It sounds like he is the Saeed Jarrah of our story, that he is, if those of you who are not Lost fans, there's a character, Saeed, who is this Iraqi torturer, who is this really great character on the show, and I feel like we're getting that kind of dark, mysterious past, this really super capable guy merged with sort of the soulfulness and the wisdom and the age of someone like Herschel from The Main Walking Dead. That seems to be the character that we have right now. For my money, Rob, that sounds like the greatest character of all time. So I was really happy with all the Daniel Salazar stuff this night. I thought it was all really good.
Don't you think it's kind of wacky that Daniel in the real world then is a barber, like shaving people with a straight razor? Like, I'm sure that can't be a coincidence. Like, but because I talked about this back when they were holed up in the barber shop and Chris was like touching his blade. And I said, well, how come nothing ever happened with that? What is this? Like Chekhov's straight razor?
Right. And it turns out I think it was.
Yeah. I think it's the tool of the trade, but I mean, it must be very difficult for Daniel. Like, he's giving you a shave to not just be like torturing you and duct taping you to the barber chair.
Yeah, just like from the PTSD of it all, you would think that he'd be like, I gotta slice this person up.
Yeah, I totally forgot where I was. I'm so sorry I did that. So sorry.
I'm in another place for a second.
I'm so sorry. Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed.
I went a really dark spot. It was a really bad time. I'm really sorry. Here's your money back.
I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah, that's interesting that he's a torturer and his day job involves him using blades.
Yeah.
Also, the actor's name is Ruben Blades.
Because what he was using was like the exact same, you know, straight razor that you would use in the barbershop.
Yeah.
So that's kind of wacky.
It's kind of great.
Yeah. Also, we had a lot of other stuff going on with, tell me about this guy who was in the cell with Nick. Is he a named character yet?
He's not on the show. I mean, he's not a series regular or anything. He is listed on Wikipedia as a character named Strand.
Strand.
Yeah, the actor's name is Coleman Domingo. And he's described here as a smart and sophisticated man with a mysterious past. So far, that seems like an accurate description of this guy. They do not mention here on the Wikipedia page how many cufflinks he has, how many watches he has for sale. The fact that he doesn't like Gary too much, or what was his name? Doug? Is this guy's name Doug?
Seems Craven like Doug.
Seems like a Gary to me. I think I must be thinking of like a Papa Smurf. But yeah, he's poor Doug. He kind of throws Doug down under the bus.
I love this guy.
Who's Strand?
He's my favorite character on the show.
I agree. He's great. I think it's him and Salazar, and it's those two right at the top with maybe Madison next, and then the rest I can, you know, I'm building relationships with the rest of these people. But those three people I would marry immediately.
This is how much I love this guy. He saved Nick, and I still love him.
That's a good point.
They were going to take Nick away and do God knows what with him, and he saved Nick, and I still love this guy. He's the best.
So give me your take on this guy. What's this guy all about? Why is he one of these people that's holed up here in quarantine? What's your take on Strand?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly why they took him away, why they put him in this holding cell. He does not appear to be sick in any way. And I don't know if they caught him like doing something or up to some sort of hijinks, because he's in some sort of a holding pen with Doug, who sort of went AWOL and was like trying to drive around after curfew. And then with Nick, who was somebody who we saw have like a temperature. So I don't know if like they brought him in with like other people that weren't feeling well or what, or if they caught him doing something and had to put him in this holding cell.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he seems like trouble. You know, we see him, he's a smooth talker. He seems like a guy who's able to find things that people want, and he gives it to them very easily and, you know, makes deals and stuff like that. He kind of seems just to keep the lost metaphors going. He seems kind of like our Sawyer. You know, he seems like our confidence man, some slick dude who can kind of just weasel his way in and out of situations. And we know that he's playing some sort of con on these military guys because he has a key. A key to what? We don't know. We have to assume that it's some way of getting out of this, you know, hellhole that these guys are in. So Strand's up to something. He's got a plan. And it involves Nick. Nick is somehow an integral part of this plan.
So what do you think about in the beginning? He has like two really great scenes in the episode. The first of which is where he asks Doug about his wife.
House figure. Tell me more about your wife's figure.
And said, okay, well, with a body like that, she'll help. That'll be just the ticket to help her latch onto a man to help her through all this.
Oh, wow. Feeling real good about yourself right now, aren't you, Doug? Or is it Gary?
When the wolf comes to the door.
Yeah. No offense to any Garys or Dougs out there. I think you guys are great. I just love the name. I think it's just, it has some power to it when a guy like this is like, come on, Doug.
Yeah. And then there's the moment where Nick is going to be taken away and he ends up bribing the military guy with cufflinks and a watch. You would think, wouldn't they just confiscate that from him, like, when he comes into that place?
Yeah, you would think that, like, this guy could just, like, be like, oh, you've got cufflinks too? All right, so let me punch you in the face, take the cufflinks, and pat you down and see what else you got. And
right.
Then I can just stop coming here and brokering deals with you.
It's some sort of crazy system where the prisoners have like things that they can barter to the guards.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got to ask, in your opinion, I feel like this is a dumb question because I know the answer. Are these cufflinks worth Nick's life?
Well, to answer that, yes, because anything is worth Nick's life because it has almost no value to me. So cufflinks would be worth like 10,000 Nick's lives to me.
Okay.
But really, is the guard in the prison cell after the zombie apocalypse, does he have anywhere formal to go? Does he need nice cufflinks?
I don't know. I guess like some of these people still think there's a chance this ship will turn around. Those people are still
boy,
nice.
Those are sharp. Those are really nice.
Yeah. They look really good.
Yeah. Is he going to be wearing a suit jacket sometime soon?
We still have Nick wearing the homeless person jacket, and I'm baffled. I don't understand how this is possible. But if Strand wants to wear that suit forever, you go right ahead.
Yeah, he pulls it off.
And you look very good.
So how is Nick going to be part of his escape plan?
He's like going to be like, all right, Nick, here's what I need you to do. Nick, I need you to go over there into the corner over there, Nick, and I need you to puke on the floor. I need you to cause a scene. I need you to have a big overdose withdrawal type of scene so I can slip through the crack and open the door and I can get you through there. And that's what we're going to do. He's going to do some nonsense like that. I feel like he's going to use Nick in Nick's shystiness and his shadiness, and he's going to use him as some sort of escape plan.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
What's your prediction? How's that going to play out?
I mean, that seems like the most likely scenario.
It's like, hey, go over there and barf for a bit. And then while you're barfing and the people are like, hey, don't barf over here. I'll go open the door and then you can stop barfing. Then you can come and join me through the door.
Sounds about right.
That sounds good. I like that.
We got to see also Travis working on trying to bring home Liza and Nick and Griselda following the events of the last episode. And Travis goes and says he demands to be brought to the army base. Are you surprised that they actually took Travis?
I am surprised. I'm more surprised that they didn't kill him. There were a few points in this episode where I really thought that's where we were going, that it was going to be that let's kill a major, major character early on into the show's run to show you we mean business. I really thought that that was going to come true with Travis here. There were a few opportunities for that, right?
Yeah, well, it definitely seemed like when they were hazing him and making him kill that walker who was the waitress in the restaurant, he couldn't do it. And he's like, oh, so you think that's a person? So you think we're killers, Travis?
Right, right. And then I could have just seen Lieutenant Moore just be like, oh, well, if that's the case, then blam, blap, blap, blap. I thought that would have happened. I really thought that he was just going to get headshot there.
Yeah. And so we ended up with Travis going on this mission to go to the library, which was pretty cool. I don't know. Would you have preferred to have seen more inside the library?
That would be fun. I like that we have, you know, this big gaggle of military people right now that we could have these kind of like alien style action sequences. And we didn't really get that. I feel like that would have been nice, but it's TV. TV needs, you know, to keep the budget on a certain level.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know that they could have afforded that action scene. And I think that the way that they opted to show it to us was pretty compelling all the same from Travis's perspective of being like, stay in the car while mom goes in and buys the things and then comes back. You know, there was sort of this feeling of him kind of being, you know, sort of really juvenile in this new world order. There's this innocent quality about him where he does not want to admit, he's not ready to admit that this is the way of it. I feel like him being left behind in the car while the grown-ups take care of business really punctuated that point for me.
I do think there's a bit of a feel like sort of in season one of Game of Thrones where there's like a couple like big battle scenes that we just sort of like skip through, like, not to spoil anything, like Tyrion just gets knocked out and we miss an entire battle
during
the first season. I think there's a little bit of that.
And that's a battle that's like in the books and stuff. And it's like, well, we can just cut some costs.
Right.
So I feel like there's a little bit of that here.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of thing like, oh, this show's a big hit. We have a lot of budget for season two and we'll show that in season two, but we just can't afford to do that here in season one.
They can't take those chances yet. First, we got to see if you people like it. Apparently, you people like it. Let's go ahead and we'll pour some of that stuff into season two. What did you think of that whole scene, sort of the outcome of it, though? There's tension that's going on in the military camp. Lieutenant Moyers is being really pushy with a lot of these people, and he's really barking orders. He's getting physical with a bunch of these people. There seems to be a divide. It looks like he's left behind. They say he's not coming. Is that because he was killed inside, or is that because they've abandoned him? What do you think's going on in terms of sort of the internal military strife that's happening?
Yeah, I think that we were seeing a lot of showing how the military is just pushed beyond their limits, and that's why these people are being so unreasonable. And I, you know, we talked about it being such a trope of the military is just being sort of like selfish and lazy in this time of disaster. And I felt like they sort of showed us all these people are actually human in a couple of those scenes where it was like, hey, those are just kids out there. I'm just trying to keep them motivated. And we saw one of the military guys saying, I'm just getting out of here and going back to San Diego. And another guy saying, hey, we've been up for 50 hours. You think we can go to sleep soon? So I think they did show some of the human side more tonight of the people that were in the military. I just don't understand how the military got outflanked by the walkers here so badly in the library.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did not seem to go well. But I mean, we've seen characters on the regular Walking Dead be in like big building situations where things seem like they have it under control and it just spirals out of control very quickly. I'm thinking of, I think it was the season four premiere when they go to like that Walmart and the roof collapses and all
right,
the zombies
the roof
go
collapses.
In.
Okay, right, so right, that's, right. They really did get the jump on them. But
right.
If you were going to be playing like Call of Duty, and you were going into them, like, I feel like you'd be able to work this out where the walkers would not be able to get on top of you and kill you. Like, I feel like there's
it
like,
also feels like there's some recklessness to what these guys are doing. Like, they're looking at it like it's a game. You
yeah,
know, they're
they've been up for a while.
Yeah, they've been awake for a while. It's 50 hours. And they also, like, they're tallying this. They say, we've got 83 rotten bastards we've killed, confirmed. they're keeping track. There's this little bit of like a scoring system to it when they stop down to snipe the lady, Kimberly from Deluxe Donuts. So I feel like there's, I don't know, I think even for these people, there's maybe a sense of they're not totally ready for what's happening here. I don't think that anybody is, and I think that that's one of the advantages of this show, or at least one of the things that makes this show interesting versus the main show, where basically everyone, even your most badass people, your badass military officers, even they are not completely prepared for dealing with the Walker threat. Or I guess I should say the skin bag threat. Rob Allison posts on postshowrecaps.com saying, is it official? Is our first name for walkers in Los Angeles coming from Lieutenant Moyers, who calls them skin bags?
I'm not comfortable with skin bag, by the way.
You don't like skin bag?
Yeah.
Why don't you like skin bag?
I don't know. First off,
close to Sinbad?
I don't know. It sounds offensive. I don't know who it's offensive to, but it sounds very offensive.
It's like calling a Zapatero a zap.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good. I'm not comfortable with skin bag.
Yeah. It's like in Harry Potter when you call someone a mudblood and everyone's like, whoa, you're not supposed to say that. Racial. So you would think that the people behind, you know, like advocates for Walker rights would be very upset with you calling them skinbag.
I think so.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, so I don't know about that.
I think I'll keep saying it. only when I'm angry, though.
You got it. So then heading into next week's episode, I mean, what do you think our main characters end up doing here? Travis, Maddie, Daniel, these people know what's going on. They know about Cobalt. There is this like 6 mile protected zone that they're in. Do they head for the hills? What do you think they are? Or do they end up sort of like saying like, hey, this is our 6 mile area? And does Travis actually become not the governor, but the mayor of this
mayor
area?
Manawa?
Yeah.
Mayor Manawa is the thing going into season two.
Everybody, you could call me the mayor. Mayor Travis.
Everybody reads Jack London. It's our new Bible.
What do you think? Do we hit the bricks? Do we hightail it with the military? Or do we end up sort of trying to be like, hey, this is our 6 mile area?
You think we're going to have the Los Angeles safe zone? You think that we're going to stick around?
Might be interesting.
It might be interesting. I feel like that's what Walking Dead is doing. So I'd like to see these guys on the move. I think that would be fun too.
Move to where though?
The desert. They've been trying to get to the desert for so long.
The thing is that where they are has not been compromised yet, and maybe that's where we're going with the Coliseum. I don't know what Coliseum that is. I mean, is it the Staples Center? Because that
doesn't
seem...
I don't know. You're the LA expert. You got to tell me.
I think that's just sort of taking a little bit of creative liberty with what arena that is, because I don't really know exactly where they are. If it's some sort of like, are they in like some part of East LA or... are they in some part of the valley? You know, I can't really get my bearings, and maybe somebody can tell us in the comments what part of LA they're supposed to be in. But in whatever 6 mile area they're in, I can't imagine that is the Staples Center, which would be like downtown, which was hard to get to from back to Maddie's house.
Yeah. We had a question. Let me just see who this question is from really quick. All right, ready?
Sure.
We had a question in from, again, the wonderful Steve Davis, who's a great friend of the show.
Prolific
Steve Davis. He came in and he said, what did you make of Daniel's visit to the arena? Did he want to verify Adams' story so that he ensures that Adams was telling the truth about Cobalt? What's your theory? You know, forget what the arena actually is. Why did Daniel decide he needed to check that thing out?
Yeah, I think he wanted to make sure that story checked out.
Right, it's like he feels confident in his ability to draw information out of somebody with a blade, but he wants to just, if he can really make double sure, that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and so we'll see ultimately what's going to happen, but it seems like that door is going to break open at the arena, and then the walkers are going to pour out and sort of rain down on us. Like, you would think, like, of the millions of other people in Los Angeles, you would think that there would be many more walkers around besides just the people. It's almost like they're all holed up in the arena.
Right.
But
yeah. So you got to imagine then, you know, once those doors come down, this safe zone you're talking about, it's not going to be very safe for much longer. Maybe that's a big piece of this, which is why we're pulling Operation Cobalt. We're, you know, having the humane termination starting at 0900 tomorrow, and we're cheesing it. We're chucking the cheesing it out of here, and we're hitting the road. And maybe that's because there's a little bit of a timetable on. Mm-hmm. These guys are going to bust out, and we're not going to be able to control this place anymore.
According to Google, the population of the greater Los Angeles area is 18.55 million people. So I just feel like we should be seeing a lot more walkers. And again, this could be part of the season one budget constraints. But at the point where like Maddie is like going beyond the fence, where they're saying that everybody is dead, like, did everybody evacuate? Did the military just wipe out so many of these walkers? Why aren't there more like walkers just littered all over the street?
Right. Well, we haven't seen too much of the streets. And I think that what we have seen of the streets, we've seen some littered chaos here and there. But I don't think we've seen anything super substantial because we've mostly been in the neighborhood where it's safe. And I think that the immediate area outside of the neighborhood, they're trying to keep looking safe as well. And I think that the sense that I'm getting is a lot of these people who were alive or were injured or were dying or whatever, or had already turned into walkers, it does seem like a lot of them are housed up in this arena, or, you know, maybe they're scattered in
the library,
in the library, you know, there's spots where they're congregating. So it's definitely happening. But I do hear what you're saying, that you would want to see a few more on the road.
It's not that I necessarily need to see them, but I feel like there hasn't been an explanation of why there are not just like hundreds and thousands of more walkers moving around.
Can we talk about something else?
Yes.
Can we talk about the costume party?
That was the worst part of the episode. Everything else this episode was good. That was laughably bad, the stuff with Chris and Alicia. I could not have cared less what was going on. And
all right, you have to kill one or the other. You either have to kill Nick or you have to kill that storyline from tonight.
That was terrible. It was really, really bad.
Yeah.
It did not do anything.
Nothing.
It did not do anything to advance the storyline. I mean, we're talking about life and death. We're talking about the end of human civilization. And we spent 10 minutes tonight on, you know,
in our party gowns and our costume jewelry.
It was very silly.
Yeah.
Sorry about
that.
They
looked great, though. They looked great. Chris looked really good.
They looked great.
You know,
it was so ridiculous that we spent time with that tonight.
Is this going somewhere?
Are they going to like be a romance?
Yeah, are we hooking up?
Boy, Alicia got over that boyfriend real quick.
Real fast, right?
Yeah, my boyfriend died 2 weeks ago.
But you're a warm body. You seem like I could do stuff.
They broke dishes. Yeah. They rode bikes. Even that first scene where she's riding the bike and it's like, hey, this is my patrol unit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh boy.
I'm the sheriff around these parts.
Yeah. I think a lot of shows struggle to write for the teenagers and kids on the show. And I think that this was a story that I did not enjoy. Everything else tonight I really liked, but that was just, I wish I could have fast forwarded that.
I really like that you're taking such a hard stance against the pink bicycle. And I know that it's because you have a pink bicycle and you just really want to.
Well, that's what I'm so worried about. I feel like that it was my pink bicycle that she took after I was dead.
Oh, do you think that this was that an Easter egg?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So that was tough. The other big thing that we didn't talk about yet was what was going on at the hospital with Exner and Liza. What do you think of the apprenticeship going on there with Exner and Liza? Do you feel better about Exner after another week of seeing her?
Yeah, I guess I do. I think the other thing with her, though, still is she's like, how could you not trust me? Why don't you trust me yet? And Liza never just straight up says, because you dragged me into a car and made me leave my son behind and you won't let me call him or go and see him or anything. So that's still a little out there for me, is what's going on between Liza and Exner there. But I do feel like Exner seems, you know, she seems like she wants to be doing good medicine. Like, it seems like she wants to be doing good medical work with these people, don't you think?
Well, I think the rubber's going to really hit the road next week, because Exner definitely is in on the plan that next week, Cobalt, they're going to mercifully take out everybody that is at the Army base that's a patient.
Humane termination is what.
Humane termination
sounds like that name. That sounds like the hashtag.
We'll see exactly just how humane they are terminated, or humanely they are terminated.
Yeah.
So, at what point is she going to reveal that news to Liza?
Yeah, and how does that go? You can't imagine that would go very well. But then again, Liza just got in the freaking car last week without thinking about it. So I don't know. I could see Liza rolling with it. I think that she'd have a hard time leaving her kid behind, but then again, she didn't have that hard a time last week.
Yeah. So you think that Liza is going to be on board to move with the military?
No. Well, what I don't really know. I have no idea where that's going to go. I have no idea what her loyalty to her family is, if she's going to stick around and wait for them, if she's going to try and find them, or if she would continue rolling along because she feels like she's serving a cause. What I will say is sort of just the fact that she did kill Griselda, that she used like the cow gun. What's that called? I'm just gonna call it the cow gun. The fact that she used the cow gun on Griselda without really thinking about it. Pretty, you know, stone cold Terminator about it.
Well, she was dead.
She was dead, but like she had no problem just like cow gunning this person that she's been spending lots of time with. And it took no time at all for her to do it. She kind of was just like, oh, okay, I'll do it. Yeah. I'll take care of it right now. So I feel like I'm not condemning her at all. I'm applauding her. I think that this is a testament to someone who might be really good at surviving in this world.
I hear that. I mean, she is hooked up to the heart monitor and she is flatlined at that point that she's doing it. So it wasn't like she was even doing like a Kevorkian of just like putting her out of her misery.
Right. But I'm saying that the flatline hadn't been a minute old.
Yeah.
By the time that she just cow gunned her.
Yes. And to be fair, she does a better job than her ex-husband, who has the opportunity to do something similar to an actual walker, full-blown zombie.
A true skin bag.
I can't do it.
Yeah, so I feel like that's a good thing for her. I feel like this is a good sign for Liza. Feels like Liza's more prepared to survive this world than frickin' Travis.
So what do you think ultimately happens then next week? So obviously they tell Liza her head's going to explode because she's not going to be happy about this.
Oh, I thought you were going to say because she got cow gun.
No. So what does she do? I have to go back and be with my family. Does she run into Nick and say, hey, Nick, you and the Strand, we got to help get back to where everybody is.
Yeah.
Or do we end up following where the military is going through her POV?
I like that you called him the Strand and now it makes me feel like he has to like peddle books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that would be good. Yeah, I feel like it could be one of those things where she sees Nick, she sees Strand, things start to snowball, Salazar and Travis and Madison, they all converge in one spot, and it's very serendipitous. I feel like there's got to be some serendipity involved to get all these people back together if that's where we're going, if we're not following disparate storylines going into season two, or if some of these characters aren't just getting crushed in the season one finale. I feel like it's going to take a lot of just sort of cosmic things aligning just so in order to get these people back in the same stories.
Okay. Josh, was there anything else from tonight's episode before we jump into taking some questions?
No, let's hop into some questions.
Right, let's hop into some questions. These come to us from you guys. Josh, we had said that we were going to be live after the finale of Fear the Walking Dead. You still up for that?
Yeah, man, I'm game.
All right. So next Sunday night live, watch for it on post-show recaps. We will be live after the finale to talk about what happened in the season one finale of Fear the Walking Dead live.
Okay. All right. You ready to get into this?
Ready.
All right. Here's from our good friend Umberto, who says, why is Nick so special that everybody goes out of their way to save him? Change your jacket!
Umberto!
There's no caps in that. I decided to provide the emphasis.
Yes. Nick's a special guy.
Why is he still wearing the jacket?
This lucky jacket at this point.
It's gotta go. I'm fine with keeping Nick on the show, but we gotta get rid of the jacket.
Yeah.
If that makes it to season two, yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Okay. Well, that's a good, very good point of fashion choice. Maybe Strand will let him wear his jacket.
That'd be an upgrade.
Say, Nick, I'm going to give you a makeover.
Yeah. You want some cufflinks? I got cufflinks.
Yeah.
Speaking of that guy, Harriet Tub Girl wrote in and said, I love the guy locked in the cell with Nick. That guy, even without his cufflinks, is a survivor. What do we call him, though? Pendin douche?
No, he's not a douche at all.
I don't think
How
he's
dare
a
you? Bite your
all.
Tongue.
Yeah, gambler douche, cufflinks douche.
Yeah.
What's the opposite of douche? Cufflinks great guy.
Cufflinks great guy? I don't know. Yeah. That doesn't really roll off the tongue.
No. I don't know. I'd have to see his business card. I would love to see that guy's business card.
Yeah.
That'd be a fine business card. But we like this guy. He's your new favorite character.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
He's great.
And what was even better about him is the fact that, yes, he had scenes with Nick, but the scenes with Nick basically didn't involve Nick at all. So this is the lightest Nick episode of Fear the Walking Dead. So you must have been very happy.
Yes. I'm trying to see what else that he has done. I'm on his IMDb. He's actually...
Olin Domingo?
Yeah.
Prolific stage actor.
Yes. He's actually been in The Nick.
Is that true?
Yeah, The Knick.
I haven't seen that show yet.
No, neither have I.
I'm supposed to get in on that, though. I've heard it's very good.
Yes.
But yeah, he's a prolific stage actor. He was Billy Flynn in Chicago. That's
impressive.
He was
in Lincoln.
He was in Lincoln?
Yeah.
I know he was in Selma, which I'm a monster I have not seen yet.
Yes.
He's been in some good stuff.
Yes. So hopefully we'll see more from him.
I'm not familiar with his work, but I look forward to finding out more. What do you think? Is this going to be a character that's going to be in it for the long haul, or is he just someone really awesome that we're going to lose really quickly?
Well, I hope so, because I have to say, throughout the history of The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead, if they introduce another African-American character,
just to kill him off,
to have them killed off, like, that is really, like, it's already a problem, but this is now now officially, like, a major thing. Like, it's almost, it's like,
what do you guys
cannot do that.
Yeah, you start to wonder if there's an agenda or something.
Cannot do that.
Yeah, please don't. Please don't do that. All right, let's get this in from Emily Stobbs, who writes, besides the military planning to pull out from the safe zone, are they going to take any of the survivors from the safe zone or hospital, or are they just planning on killing all of them? And I guess that I take that to mean what happens to, like, the Travis and Madisons of the world.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In the actual Walking Dead, we had that they were going to, what, they were bombing Atlanta, right?
Right.
So I don't know if they are going to be having, like, some sort of an air raid where, and maybe we hear that, and maybe that's what ultimately sends our characters onto the road, but I don't know if they have any reason to be doing that.
Right. Oh, man, that just got me nervous. What if there is some crazy air raid type of thing next week in the finale? Maybe that's what they're saving all their budget for.
That is very possible, but I feel
because,
like,
you know, that there was this back in season two of the regular Walking Dead, when Frank Darabont was still briefly involved, there was this whole episode that either they did shoot or they partially shot or they wanted to shoot, where the whole idea was going to be seeing the fall of Atlanta from, like, the perspective of a guy like Dale. And they were going to show a lot of that stuff. So Robert Kirkman, who works on both shows, and Gail Ann Hurd, who works on both shows, and Greg Nicotero, and some of these people who have crossover between both shows, have obviously had some interest in that type of storyline, showing that before. And we've seen glimpses of that here in Fear of the Walking Dead, but that could be something that they would want to show here in the finale coming up, is just, like, full-scale Armageddon as wreaked by the military. You know, that could be something that could happen.
Now, if you were going to have that, I don't think it would necessarily be their area, but that arena, that sports arena, if they're like, oh, there's like 80,000 walkers that are locked in there, and once they get out, they're going to, you know, the containment is going to be done for all of Los Angeles.
Right.
Maybe they're going to, like, do bomb that place, and because you know, I don't know how close they are to that arena. They were close enough that Daniel could walk there.
Yeah.
And he did not seem to have needed to leave the safe zone.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I guess. Or maybe if there's no sort of, like, people on patrol, Daniel was able to leave the safe zone and actually go there.
Citizens on patrol.
But again, at the point where there's, you know, millions and millions of walkers roaming around Los Angeles, I don't know how Daniel was able to do that safely.
Yeah. And not just him, but also Travis at one point after the library, when they drive away, they're like, we're not coming back. You have to walk home, which was so mean. And he walked home with no problem.
Yeah.
It's like it seemed like it probably was going to take him at least a few minutes by car. So you got to imagine it's like a 45-minute schlep back home when they dropped him off.
He would be lucky now not to get mugged.
Right. It's a long time to be out in the world.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, so that was pretty impressive for Travis. These people are able to commute around fairly easily right now.
Very impressive.
Yeah, it's good stuff. This is from Aisha Prater. Hey, guys. So how would you react if you were Madison and you knew Daniel had a U.S. soldier tied up and was about to skin him like a potato to get information? Do you stop it, or do you ride it out like she did? Rob, what would you do?
Travis really has a real knack for walking into his house where something terrible is going on, right?
Yeah, that's kind of a talent.
Well, where were they? Were they in Travis's house, or they were in Susu's house? They sort of took up shop in Susu's house.
Yeah. It seems like they like annexed Susu's house.
Yeah. The Salazars can go move into Susu's house.
Yeah, Susu's house is now our pool house.
So Travis walks in and again sees what's going on here.
Like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
This guy.
But he wasn't like, hey, let him go, let him go. And I think I would just be like, okay, I didn't see anything.
Well, he was at first, he was trying to get in, then Madison and Daniel were both like, say Cobalt. Tell him Cobalt. Tell him yeah. what that is. And that was a turning point.
And Travis and Madison are like, tell me you didn't know this was going on. Tell me you didn't know this was going on.
And she's like, I kinda knew.
Yeah. Didn't bother me.
Didn't bother me that much. It did bother her for a minute. But then, you know, we see Daniel telling the story as he's washing his hands. Like, how do I tell her that I was the torturer and all of this stuff? And, you know, he's pouring his heart out. And finally, she just says, said, did he tell you anything? So she got over it quick. She got over it quick. But what would you do in her shoes? Would you play it out the way that Madison did? Would you just let this thing happen?
Yeah, what are you going to do? How are you going to stop him?
Yeah, that's the other piece of it, too. It's like, if this guy who we've seen shotgun blast another living or unliving thing in the face and now is saying, hey, I'm going to be downstairs just peeling some flesh off of this guy. Do not disturb. I think I probably wouldn't disturb. And that's because, as we've established over many podcasts, I am Craven. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that I could stand up to Daniel Salazar.
No, you could not.
Thank you for the confirmation.
None of us could.
Yeah, I just needed to hear it.
Yeah. And he's going to be very pissed now. They took his wife.
Yeah.
He's gone in like Liam Neeson mode.
Yeah, he's gone taken.
Well, wait till they take Ophelia.
Yeah, he's very special set of skills.
I have to say, I'm also kind of down on Ophelia.
You're down on Ophelia? Why?
I don't know.
I think you'd be up on Ophelia since she manipulated the crap out of Adams.
I guess so, but I just kind of don't know what she has left to bring to the table.
That was a smooth move.
It was. I don't know. I'm not loving Ophelia as a character. She's one of my least favorites. She hasn't done anything that's really wrong. Like, I don't have a dislike into her, but if I was going to do power rankings, I'd have her pretty low on my list.
Is she above or below the costume masquerade party dwellers?
Alicia and Chris might have surpassed Nick this week for me, because at least Nick, I'm interested in his storyline by proxy with Strand.
Right.
He's like the sidekick for the guy who I really do like.
Yeah. I think that Nick could be a good sidekick character.
Yeah.
You know, I think that could be a good role to have, like a mentor-mentee type of thing.
Yeah. Now, the Alicia and Chris thing was just like horsing around at a time when we are dealing with the end of civilization and they're having like some like Ferris Bueller's day off.
That's like when Carl and What's-Her-Face were running around in the forest at the end of season 5 of Walking Dead. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
They were just like, hey, let's play tag in the woods where there's zombies everywhere.
Yes. And at least there was an ominous sense of danger with that one of them was going to get killed. And there really wasn't. This was like there was seemingly no danger there for either Alicia or Chris.
It's also so stupid because they were making all of the noise. And noise is the last thing you want to make when you're in the zombie apocalypse.
I'll tell you, that has not been a factor really so far through 5 episodes of Fear the Walking Dead. At the point where those guys were like shooting the gun at the woman who was the waitress, you did not see other walkers like start to stir and come after them.
Do you think that these damn skin bags are deaf?
I don't think they're deaf. I just don't think that it's been the kind of thing where you would think it's the early days of the zombie apocalypse. You would think there'd be walkers everywhere, but it just has not been the case where we have not. And again, this could be a budget thing as well, where we have not seen a horde of walkers really just converge on people because they're making noise.
Wesley Walker wanted to know, do you see a Walking Dead step-sibling romance developing?
God, I hope not.
Is that where we're going, though?
Yeah.
You kind of do have to wonder.
It's a little Game of Thrones, right?
You're running out of options in this world, though.
Yeah, time to repopulate.
That's kind of where we're at.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Yeah.
You shipping that?
I guess so.
I don't think you're shipping it.
No. It's look. We are dealing with serious subject matter, and if you want me to take the show seriously, I can't get invested in the kids having horseplay.
Right. It's just not happening.
It's not the same show when you're giving me that. It's either we are dealing with a drama surrounding the end of civilization, or this is Dog with a Blog all of a sudden.
Right, right. It was kind of Zombieland-ish, which, and I like Zombieland quite a bit, but, you know, that's a much sillier, whimsical thing than we get on a show like Fear the Walking Dead. So it did, it felt a little...
We have no time for whimsy.
Yeah, there's no whimsy. It's very serious business we have.
It's a whimsy-free zone.
Yeah, the safe zone, the whimsy safe zone. This is from Legion Rex. Lieutenant Moyers is the best character, and it's not close. I hope he somehow survives. How do you feel about Lieutenant Moyers this week?
Oh, he dead.
He dead, you think, for show?
You think he got out of the library? They left him there.
I don't think it's impossible.
I think it's impossible.
You think it's impossible? You think it's impossible? You don't think that he could be like, he could like limp along somewhere and reveal himself?
I mean, you think he's going to show back up and be like, Travis, I told you to stay in the van.
Is that a satisfying ending for this guy? I mean, this is a guy that we're kind of building up to be somebody who really needs to get his on-screen comeuppance. And if that's just happening off-screen, you think that that's a satisfying ending?
No, I don't think it was a satisfying ending, but I do believe that that is his ending. I can't imagine we are going back to that library at some point.
There's just so much business to attend to in 1 hour left of this season. So I see that. I feel that for sure.
Yeah.
That's a bummer, though. I do like that character. I thought that he was a good foil for Travis.
I agree.
I would have liked to have gotten a few more eyes on the internal conflict in his camp. You know, it seemed like, what was his name? I think his name was like Costa or something like that. One of these other soldiers who clearly was rubbing up against this guy and it was not working out well, and he leaves him behind and says, we're booking it out of here. I would have really liked to have seen a little bit more of what was going on in that story. I feel like there's interesting stuff that's on the table there.
Okay. What else you got?
All right. This is from Rob Allison. What do you think humane termination will be when Cobalt goes into effect? Gas? You doubt the army would nuke LA? Ideas?
Yeah. See, well, Rob is a medical professional, so this is probably of particular interest to him.
What do you think Rob would do?
I wouldn't want to speculate.
You just cow gun everybody?
I wouldn't want to speculate.
But you think that's what's going to happen? They're just going to go around cow gunning people?
I don't know. I don't know if that would be so humane for people who are alive.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm not even sure it's humane for the cows. But that being said, I would say, I think there's only one cow gun. I feel like some sort of lethal injection and or, you know, gassing the facility. I think that's probably the way they're going to go.
Yeah, and I feel like are they going to waste their bullets? You know, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
So you got to do something that's going to be quick. Are you going to feed them to the arena? That would be terrible. That wouldn't be so humane. How literally should we take humane, by the way?
Probably not very.
Right? Your options are limited.
Yeah.
You know, you got to work with what you got here.
Seems like a buzzword.
Yeah. Do you think that the cow gun is going to be like the new crossbow in the show? Are we going to keep the cow gun? Is that going to be an iconic weapon? We talked about this either last week or the week before, getting some iconic weapons on Fear the Walking Dead.
No, I don't think so, because I believe it is some sort of, it's powered by what? Like electric or
is that
gas?
How that works?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it requires some sort of a power. So it's not like Daryl's crossbow.
It's a cool idea.
It's a cool idea, but I think it really, you have to be in very close proximity. I don't think it's a very effective weapon.
Not practical.
No.
All right, let's wrap up with this. This is from Umberto. Okay, let's get real. Who dies next week?
All right.
Take some predictions. Let's make some
predictions. Well, who do we have left on our board? Who did we draft?
All right, here is who you have. You have Liza. You have Tobias, who seems to be MIA. You have Nick Clark, and you say that Travis is safe. That's your team. That's your squad.
Yeah.
I have Chris. I have Griselda, RIP.
Mm-hmm.
I have Alicia, and I say that Madison is safe. So that's who's on the board.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to lose any of those. I would say of the five left, I would say Liza is the person in the most jeopardy.
Yeah. Just because of where she is right now. I would say Nick is also in some jeopardy right now.
Nick's in some jeopardy, but I kind of feel like Nick and Strand at least have an escape route back where I could see Liza putting up a fight for, like, we can't do this. We can't. And they end up sort of like taking her out.
I hope not, because I like Liza and I think that she's got Carol upside.
I do too. I like Liza a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Same.
And I think it would be interesting because also Maddie blames her for stuff. And so I like that there is a bit of a love triangle there between Travis, Maddie, and Liza.
Yeah, I like that too. So I guess what we just, so you would say Liza's the person you would predict.
Of those five people, of those five, I would predict that that's the case there. I feel like of the other people that we haven't talked about, I feel like Ophelia, I think that she's safe because I don't think we're going to take away Daniel's daughter and his wife. I feel like that she's safe. Who else is in the mix? Who are some other characters?
There's Daniel himself. Is Daniel somebody that we could lose?
We need Daniel. We cannot lose Daniel.
It would be a shame to lose him.
Yes.
It would be a real bummer.
It certainly would be. Yeah. And I don't know, are there any other major characters?
Well, you know me, I'm still saying I feel like getting rid of Travis or Madison would be a real statement for this season.
I don't think we're doing that.
I know, I don't think so either, but I'm just going to stay the course and I'm going to predict Travis. I'll say Travis is going to be the one that goes.
Okay.
I'll just go outside the box and say that.
All right. Well, I don't think it's going to be Travis or Madison, so I will abstain.
Okay. You said Liza. Hold to Liza.
Keep to Liza. Josh, what about a hashtag for this episode? I really do like a hashtag no time for whimsy.
Okay, that's good. Let's keep that.
You want to also include humane termination if people have enough characters left?
Or hashtag cow gun would work as well.
Cow gun. Yeah. The fever. And the only cure is more cow gun.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's what happened with Nick with his 101 fever. The only cure was more cow gun.
And is Strand the equivalent of Christopher Walken in this scenario?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I think so.
The Walking Dead.
I can't believe it. You're the Walking Dead. Okay, that would that's your fourth hashtag.
There you go.
So then next Sunday night, you and I will be live for the finale of Fear the Walking Dead. And then we begin our journey back to Alexandria.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. I'm excited to get back to the main Walking Dead. I think that Fear of the Walking Dead, at the very least, if nothing else, has gotten me really back in the Walking Dead mood. I think that Fear of the Walking Dead has shown a lot more of its potential than maybe we expected from the first episode. I think that this has been a fun little ride, but I'm really looking forward to getting back to Alexandria. I think that's going to be really fun.
Yeah, I might need to rewatch the finale because I feel like I've totally forgotten everything going on in regular Walking Dead.
Yeah, maybe do a little bit of a catch-up.
Need to catch up. Okay.
All right.
Well, this was very fun. We're looking forward to hearing your comments on postshowrecaps.com. Of course, you could subscribe to our Walking Dead podcast feed at postshowrecaps.com/TWD. iTunes, you subscribe now, get your Fear the Walking Dead, and we'll throw in regular Walking Dead for free.
Ooh, that sounds like a good plan.
It's a good deal.
Yeah, it's good. I like that.
And of course, this Friday, Josh and I and Antonio Mazzaro released the first episode of our new weekly podcast, Most Shows Recapped, where we'll be talking about one new show or movie a week. And this week on the first official episode, we talked about the premiere of Heroes Reborn.
Yatta!
Yes. And of course, you can catch that on postshowrecaps.com as well. So, Josh, great job tonight.
You as well, Rob.
Very much looking forward to next Sunday night's episode. You could follow Josh on Twitter. He's at Round Howard. I am at Rob Sisternino. Anything else?
No, that's it. Looking forward to next week.
All right. See you guys next Sunday night for the finale of season 1 of Fear the Walking Dead. Take care.